Welcome to Still Scared Talking Children's Horror, a podcast about creepy, spooky and disturbing children's books, films and TV. I'm Ren Wednesday, my co-host is Adam Wybray. Our podcast is a year old and today we're talking about The Malevolence by Tom Burgess. A full transcript of this episode will be available, so check the show notes for that. Enjoy! Good evening, Adam.
Good evening.
So, for this episode, we have to pretend that we're not sitting in front of our computers in bedrooms and computer rooms and trying not to make too much noise on our squeaky chairs, but instead sitting in front of a bonfire in the woods, roasting sweet potatoes in the fire, while strange creatures make chitinous noises in the trees. Because
it's Brexit ghost. Britain!
Yes, you got it in one. Well done. Also, it's Halloween.
Oh, so yeah, we have to make our own podcasts out of sticks.
That's right. Yeah, the podcasts of the future are just creatures in the trees making noises.
But at least we have our pride. So,
and furthermore, it is our first anniversary episode.
We're a year older.
Happy birthday!
Happy birthday to us! And
aww.
A year older, yeah. A year creakier.
A year creepier.
I think I don't know if they go hand in hand, being creaky and being creepy. Maybe if you're an item of furniture.
Yeah. I mean, and who's to say we're not?
You don't know. You can only hear our voices.
Yeah.
We could be.
I haven't even seen you in person for several years.
So. So I may have transformed into a creepy wardrobe in the meantime.
Yeah.
I mean, it's open to possibility.
Yeah. So, yeah, we've been talking about ghosts and witches and werewolves and wheelers and haunted puppets and clown scarecrows for a whole year.
Well, and more than a year. We just weren't making anyone else listen to us talk about these things previously.
It's true. but still feels like there's a lot. There's a lot to cover.
Oh, so, gosh, yeah. It still feels like we've only scratched the surface, to be honest.
Yeah.
Like, it feels like I sort of discover more and more, really.
Yeah. I was worried at first that we'd run out of things.
You know? Oh, how naive. Like,
right. Yeah. We do Coraline and
a few goosebumps and that'll be our lot.
Yeah, and that'll be it, but we haven't even done Coraline, and we're at 20 plus episodes a year in, and
that's ridiculous.
So much.
Coraline's my favourite.
I know. Coraline's the reason we're doing this.
Pretty much, yeah. Episode 100, there we go.
Yeah? Is that going to be Coraline? Yeah. All right. Okay. I'm up for that. We'll have such troves of knowledge and nuance by then. It'll be
exactly. We'll dissect it like a fish.
Yeah, just like a fish.
Yeah.
So
you wanted to assess what we've learned.
Yeah, what have we learned?
Well, I've made a few notes.
Mm-hmm.
homes, I mean, I kind of already knew this, but homes becoming other and unwelcoming. I mean, that's a real Coraline trope. But it came up really nicely in Marianne Dreams as well, of course.
Yes.
But
yes. And Mercedes Ice has a bit of that as well.
Yes, that's true.
And Thornhill, although Thornhill was never really welcoming.
No, but I guess there's always the question of whether the child can adapt to this home or not, you know, whether they can use tactics to find a way, like Mercedes does for most of the book, until it's all exploded. And then, obviously, he loses his kingship.
But yeah, a lot of buildings, a lot of homes, definitely. I mean, I think I've mentioned before about, the familiar becoming unfamiliar being a trope of children's horror. And yeah, we've seen that with homes and houses.
I think it's also, though, that children can't drive. Apart from toy cars, I guess. And some of them might be able to drive, but, you know, they're not allowed to drive.
And they can't. Some of them are probably better at driving than me.
Oh, yeah, and me, I can't drive. But,
but nevertheless, we're superior.
I have money and I can go and get a train and I don't need... I might... go with someone else, but you know, theoretically it's my right to buy being a British citizen is my right to get a train. I mean, even if I've got nowhere to go, I can get a train and I can sit in my train seat and then write an angry letter to the Telegraph if my ticket is checked more than once.
You are a gentleman of a certain age.
I am now a gentleman of a certain age. We've been doing this for a year. I think it's true. but, you know, what I'm getting at in a roundabout way is that when you're a child, your home makes up a fair portion of your world, right? Even more than, I think, when you're an adult. That the home and the school, become... your world to a degree, and so if you are uncomfortable at home or at school, or these places become threatening, it's not very easy for you to escape, basically. And I think this ties into my second point, the fear of not being believed and of monstrous authority figures.
Yep.
Because if, say, you have a teacher or a demon headmaster who's up to various nefarious no goodings, then if your parents don't believe you, you're in a pickle. So yeah, I think that fear of that recognition that as a kid you don't have much power, and that there's a whole world of adults who do have power and can circumscribe your movements and what you're able to do and what you can't do, and that if they abuse that power, who do you turn to apart from other potentially devious authority figures?
And we've definitely seen some bands of children against adult authority figures. So I'm thinking of the chrysalids.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Particular. And the demon headmaster. But yeah, that's definitely a reoccurring theme, I think.
And I think the fear, and this is whether these are human monsters, if you will, or humanoid figures like, say, the aliens in Interstellar Pig. These monstrous figures being merciless. I think the idea that even though you're a child, there's no way to appeal to their sympathies or better judgment. Like, say, with the witches. You know, it doesn't matter if you're the sweetest, kindest, nicest child in the world. The witches want to squish you and squash you and annihilate you. Like, the fact that there's just absolutely no reasoning with the witches.
Yeah.
Or say, likewise, that the aliens in Stella Pig... Like, you know, that they are completely merciless in their stance towards humans.
Yeah.
So I think that's quite scary. Because I think maybe there's that hope as a child that, you know, maybe horrible adults will be a bit easier on you because you're a kid.
Yeah. Yeah.
So having that safety buffer taken away, I think, is scary.
Yep.
And he talked about groups, but I think sometimes there's also the fear of groupthink, right? That fear of being the single person who sticks out, right? That everyone else is either hypnotized or deceived or in on something that you're not in on. And that you end up in the position of being you against the world. I think that's pretty scary as a kid.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we get a bit of that in House of Stairs.
Yeah.
With where it's two of them at the end, but they're the only ones who are resisting both the machine and the authority figures who put them in the machine.
Yeah, absolutely. It's something you see a lot of in young adult fiction, like The Hunger Games as well, right? And then finally, perhaps, the fear of being accidentally evil.
Oh, yeah.
So that fear of being cursed or doomed, especially by something that was out of your control or that you accidentally did and didn't mean to. So I was thinking of Witch Week.
Oh, yeah.
And obviously some of the children respond with pleasure to the knowledge that they're a witch, but some, like our protagonists, are sort of overwhelmed with fear and shame and horror at discovering that they're these somehow evil figures without, you know, even knowing it.
Yeah. And that's another thing that's out of control.
Yeah, and it's something that they can't run away from as well. Because it's part of them.
Having powers of that you don't know what they are or how they work, and they make people fear you.
You get that in the chrysalids as well, right?
Yeah. And perhaps the accidental ghosts of Beetlejuice. Maybe.
Yeah. The lovely ghosts.
The lovely ghosts.
The ghosts who were nice. I think also,
yeah, good stuff.
Just while it's on my mind, I don't know if we've encountered this yet, but I've just been thinking about Narnia a bit recently. I don't know if I ever cover Narnia because they're not really horror, but the last battle really bothered me and upset me as a kid. And yeah, okay, they all die, so of course it's going to be upsetting, apart from Susan because she likes boys, so she goes to hell. But, you know, they all end up going to Caer Paravel, right? So, yeah, if you're brought up to believe in heaven, this isn't such a tragic ending, but I've got a very atheistic dad, so I definitely didn't believe in heaven as a kid. Believe in hell a bit, not so much heaven. I mean, that's what having an atheist dad and a Catholic aunt will do to you, I think. but one thing that really upset me is that after the train crash, they're dead and they don't know it. So they're walking through Narnia, being like, hey, we're back in Narnia. How did that happen? Oh, I remember this kind of jolt and we were on a train, weren't we? And we kind of know that they're dead, yet they don't know yet. That really freaked me out as a kid. That not knowing, the idea that you may be dead or you may be ill or something might have gone wrong, and yet you're oblivious.
Oh yeah, I mean that ties into my actually like number one children's horror experience from the Moomins, which we might do an episode on.
Oh yeah, we definitely should. There's quite a bit of horror in the Moomins.
Yeah, but there is this when they find this magical hat that transforms things. So they put some eggshells in it and it turns into pink clouds and they're all floating about and it's lovely. But then they play hide and seek and Moomin Troll hides in the hat. And then he comes out and he's sort of transformed into this strange looking creature, but he doesn't realize it. And everyone's all like, oh, what's this? Like, oh, how did you get in the house? And he's like, oh, it's me, Moomin Troll. And like, that just absolutely terrified me.
Oh.
Yeah. It's the idea that, you know, his mother doesn't recognise him. He's like, it's me.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Oh. Oh.
See, once we've collected up all these tropes, we can write the scariest children's story that ever existed and traumatise a whole new generation of kids like we were traumatised.
Yeah, that's the end game of the podcast.
Yeah. If it wasn't already apparent.
Should we talk about our topic for today?
Yeah. Yes, we've had a request.
Yeah, so this one is a bit different from usual in that the author, Tom Burgess, approached us on Twitter to see if we were interested in talking about his graphic novellas. And we had a look at them and thought they'd be pretty good. So in the interest of full disclosure, we have access to free digital copies of these stories, but we're going to just talk about them in our regular way.
With watermarks, but I don't think that particularly impacted my enjoyment.
Yes. So spoilers and all that. And mostly we're going to talk about Malevolence with a TS, as in several Malevolence. Sorry. What?
Man, I left it to you to say the name.
I just realised that a malevolent isn't really a
thing.
Isn't really a thing. But if it were, it would be the plural of that.
This is really the only young adult-ish one out of the trilogy of Tom's horror-themed graphic novels. It's the only one with teenage protagonists.
So, yeah, that's the one we're going to talk about most. Illustrated by Joe Becci. So in Malevolence, Click Click, a group of school kids have dared each other to stay the night in 50 Berkeley Square, which is a notorious haunted house. They have a Ouija board, but before they even get to use it, one of the group starts telling the story of a boy called Billy Blore. Billy was dared to stay in the same house, in the same room they were in, and summon the spirit of a ghost called Mags with the Ouija board. Mags was born into the rich family who lived in the house back when it was flourishing, but was declared, quote, wrong in the head and kept inside out of the way. One day he attacked and he escaped and attacked a couple and ripped their tongues out. After that he was kept locked in the attic by his brother, where he screamed his vocal cords to shreds until all he could do was click his tongue to call for food. Eventually his brother couldn't stand the incessant clicking and he left Mags to starve to death in the attic. So Billy completes the dare and feels quite smug about it because nothing seems to have happened. But soon he starts to feel like he's being watched and starts seeing things out of the corner of his eye and getting cold chills. And it's clear that he's got the attention of Mags. So Billy starts to become undone. He's being pursued by the click-clicking noise wherever he goes, until finally he returns to the house in Berkeley Square and sets it and himself on fire. So the girl finishes telling the story, and one of the boys is like, oh yeah, it's all true. The caretaker told me, and he bet that we wouldn't stay the night here. Also, this Ouija board is the one that Billy brought with him.
By the way.
They scoff, but then the caretaker himself turns up, and he says that he had to bring them there because Mags is restless and he needs the tongues. They try to leave, but the withered, wild-eyed face of Mags rips through the wall, and the last panel is the lights going off in the house with the words, click, click. So, it's a good, creepy, classic kind of ghost story.
Yeah, very much set up like a story told round the very fire we're sat in front of now. Ooh, it's warm and toasty.
But our backs are cold, and maybe there are things lurking in the woods.
So, I mean, visually, I think Mags is pretty scary.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he looks suitably kind of gnarled and knotted, like he was hewn out of some old tree. I really like the panel of Mags emerging from the wall in particular. It reminded me quite a bit of a similar panel in a Junji Ito comic, Uzumaki. It's all about a town infected by spirals, and there's a sort of man who grows these sort of spiracular maggoty growths, basically. And there's a bit when he comes through the wall, and his face is sprouted. It reminded me quite a lot of that image. And in fact, the special edition of the comic comes with a foreword by Junji Ito. I definitely saw an influence, in as much as I think Ito sometimes probes into more existential horrors, but you know, there's a real monster of the week flavour to Ito's stuff as well. That Ito clearly loves monsters. You know, he loves old-fashioned ghost stories. He loves things that go bump in the night. And I think you get the sense that Tom also just really likes these sort of later night creepy tales.
Yeah, definitely.
That in a way, some of the pleasure is that we don't get too distracted by psychology. Which I think I think in this context kind of works, that it's not really about that. It's more about the kind of simple pleasure of storytelling, and the way that with those sort of folkloric stories, you never quite know if there's any germ of truth to them or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I do really enjoy these kind of ghost stories. I keep wanting to watch The Haunting of Hill House, which is just on Netflix at the moment, and people keep talking about how good it is, but I'm so bad at dealing with tension in a TV or film that whenever like it's dark and creepy music starts playing, I can't look at the screen and like just start reading things on my phone instead to diffuse the tension.
It'd be pretty scary though if the same scary image appeared on the phone when
Yeah, that would get me. But
Shout out to Mackie to hopefully put that one, get the wheels on that one moving.
So I have, I have both this drive to enjoy ghost stories, but also really quite a scaredy cat. So I enjoyed this because it didn't have spooky music.
So, well, you could have put on spooky music while reading.
But it was good and creepy, but I was actually able to read it.
It's a good quote from a horror podcast.
I have quite a disadvantage in the horror reviewing field.
Ren had just one fatal flaw. So this is set in London, right? Did you hear much talk of local London ghosts when you were young in London? Did you hear about the ghosts?
No, I don't think so.
No ghosts in your school, or, you know?
Was a ghost in my school.
Oh, there we go, there we go. I knew there'd be one.
Yeah, no, my school was, 400 years old, and there was a staircase that the students weren't allowed to walk up or down. It was a staff-only staircase, but that, because it was so old and it was, like, part of, like, the oldest part of the building, and apparently someone had been murdered around those stairs, and, I had a friend who said she was quite sensitive to these things, and she said those stairs definitely had a creepy aura. So.
Wow, there we go.
Yeah.
I mean, living here in Suffolk, there's obviously the old folk tale of Black Shuck, the demonic dog. I'm pretty scared of dogs, so... I definitely remember come across. Yeah, it's loosely what Hound of the Baskervilles was based on.
Oh, okay.
Just a big ghost dog, basically.
Also, I mean, my dad
is a ghost.
He's a vicar. And,
not just a vicar, he's like a bishop or something now, isn't he?
Yeah, but back when this is relevant, when he was...
a humble vicar.
A regular vicar, he got sometimes had to go to people's houses when... if they to bless them, if they felt that there was something creepy in the house. So he sometimes got to go and bless houses. Where there might be ghosts.
Did he ever report back on, like, something that he felt was supernatural?
Well, he said they went into this into a room that these people wanted blessing, and he said it did have a weird feeling to it, like it felt cold and unfriendly.
I once looked around a house and it had a bit of a weird feeling, but I think that was mostly because there was, like, a plastic baby's high chair and an empty can of beer left on it. Which I think gave me a really bad ambience. So I don't know if it was actually, like, haunted or anything. Or if it was just the empty
haunted
beer.
Haunted by a drunk baby.
Oh, that's the saddest thing. God. Dickens really missed a trick not writing about that one. I could have been in the sequel to Christmas Carol. Scrooge and the Drunk Baby.
Before this
gets into being a Decemberist song.
I think the thing I liked best about Malevolence was the drawings of the sort of Mag's shadowy figure sort of turning up to haunt Billy. So he sort of turns up at the windows like when Billy's brushing his teeth and, like, appears just, like, creeping in the background of a crowd scene on TV. My favourite one is that Billy is at the swimming pool diving for quoits. Quoits?
Quoits? Quoits.
Quoits.
With a New York accent. Quoits!
he dives to the bottom of the pool, and He sees the dark, huddled figure of Mags just sort of underwater in the corner of the pool. I thought that was pretty great.
That whole sequence is very good. I did feel we see a bit too much of Mags a bit too early myself. I would have liked to build the tension a bit more before we saw Mags myself.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like Mags is hanging out all over the place.
Yeah.
But the art is creepy enough that it does remain creepy.
Mm. Yeah, lots of dark scribbly pencil. Yeah,
I liked the kind of scribbliness of it, actually, quite a bit, yeah.
Yeah.
But how do you feel Mag sort of worked as the antagonist?
No, I mean, it's sort of entering into the territory of mental illness and horror, which is obviously a big trope that we haven't really encountered so far.
It's in a lot of adult horror.
Uh-huh, yeah.
I could list off so many films that include it, but it hasn't cropped up as much as one might expect with children's horror.
Mags is scary and violent and at least assumed to be mad in the mould of sort of many kind of asylum horror stories. And it doesn't do anything different with that trope, which, I mean, maybe it doesn't really need to. It is quite a sort of straightforward ghost story. But not my favourite.
I guess there's the question of, okay, if this is an actual local ghost story, should it be changed, or what would be the meaning of it being changed? It's tricky, I guess, because I suppose a lot of folkloric stories are going to be problematic because they're often steeped in fears of otherness and indifference, or just in plain prejudicial attitudes. There's the question of, should we repeat these stories, I guess, or if we're repeating them, should these be subverted? I guess there'd be a way to do that within the frame narrative, perhaps, while keeping the central story the same. But I can understand also that, as a writer, Tom seems to care a lot about kind of economy of expression. There's very little kind of real exposition in any of these three graphic novels.
Yeah.
They do seem to be just recountings of stories. So, yeah, maybe in future it's something he could look more into.
But, I mean, yeah, that aside, I think Mags is definitely a very scary antagonist with a scary desire for people's tongues.
Wow. <yeah. laughs>
So I think it works quite well.
So I think I somewhat perhaps ironically preferred the other two graphic novels, so Hallows Fell and The Eerie. So The Eerie is the second one, which a photojournalist called Rebecca goes to the southern coast of England and encounters, well, the ghosts, I suppose, of various nasty smugglers. And, you know, I think defaming smugglers is fine. I really liked the art for that. It's probably the art for that was possibly my favourite of the three. I don't know, I found it genuinely uncanny. All the people looked just slightly off, and the expressions were quite unreadable. And again, I did my postgrad in Devonshire. Not saying the locals were like that, but I thought it captured that part of the country. It felt the most kind of location specific, perhaps because of the smugglers' connection. But that's the one which felt most firmly rooted in place to me, which I think is what I want from a ghost story.
Okay, yeah. It definitely felt quite folk horror, I think, that one.
Yeah, that's true. And I am a bit of a sucker for folk horror, having recently listened to the brilliant Evolution of Horror, Mike Munker's podcast on folk horror. Quite into it at the moment. And then Hallows Fell is also rural. It's set in...
Hallows Fall.
Oh, Fall. Is set in Kent's Bluebell Hill, or around that kind of region.
Yeah.
And I don't know Kent nearly as well as the southern coast. But, yeah, I guess for me, I tend to like those locations more than London. But then, you know, I'm a country boy, so... So, you know, it's probably partly what you can relate to, right? Like, I've spent a fair amount of time walking around woods late at night, and that's creepy to me. I've spent less time exploring abandoned buildings in London.
Yeah, and I don't think I've done that either. I don't think.
not even in your wild freegan skipping days.
I'm not ruling it out entirely, but I can't think of a specific abandoned building. Oh,
maybe it's been repressed. Maybe it was so spooky.
Maybe. But yeah, I like the different locations and how they're specifically tied to the different locations. I think that works well.
Yeah. So I guess selfishly, I'd quite like a Black Shuck one, if you're listening, Tom, because then it could be set in Suffolk, the spookiest county. that's not official or anything. that's what I'm claiming. I mean, one of our beers is called Ghost Ship, so.
Cool.
Although the real spooky thing is that with climate change, apparently beer is going to become less and less produced and less available.
That is the real horror.
Well, yeah. Well, you know, I thought I'd already talked about Brexit, so I thought I'd get the kind of bigger picture horror in there as well. You know.
Yeah. I liked in Hallows Fall that the horrible guy got, like, sacrificed by his fiancé. I enjoyed that.
Yeah, he was pretty horrible.
Yeah, I mean, it reminded me of, you know, in The Shining
Wendy?
You know, I was watching The Shining and we're like, lock him in the freezer, Shelley, lock him in the freezer, that kind of thing. That this guy did get metaphorically locked in the freezer, which was good.
I'm glad, I mean, you know, well, we've discussed Kubrick, I think, on this podcast before, and both of our warinesses about Kubrick and the fact that he seems to be a little bit too much in love with his evil masculine protagonists.
Yes. So, yeah, I was glad that this, if not evil, but quite boorish and unpleasant.
Well, it was sort of like a yuppie from a 90s sketch show.
Yeah.
Like, it made me think of, like, a Kids in the Hall yuppie that would be played by Bruce.
The Big Watch.
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But, yeah, I think the thing that I like least about all these stories is how unlikable the characters are.
Well, the teenagers in Malevolence sure swore a lot, I thought. I mean...
They were very sweary.
They were very sweary children.
It was all, I don't know.
You wouldn't have caught me swearing like that. Or if I did, I would go and wash my mouth out with soap. But, you know... I only actually did that once. I wouldn't advise it.
I just found it a bit sweary and cynical and grouchy for my tastes.
Yeah, where's the love?
Where is the love?
That's what we want in our horror, more love.
Maybe I just want cosy horror.
Oh, cosy horror. Yeah, we're a long way from the Pogles. I do know what you mean. I mean, it's something that happens in horror, I think, and I do struggle with it, actually. I read Peter Straub's Ghost Story recently, which is effectively creepy, but, has a lot of kind of boorish men and generally not very likeable characters, and it's quite a long novel, and I just kind of felt like I don't really want to have to spend all this time in your company. Which isn't so much an issue, to be fair, with a short graphic novel, because you know, it's not like a whole novel. But at least they had characters. I mean, I love Junji Ito's stuff. I'm a big fan. But I will say that one of his weaknesses is that sometimes the characters do lack character. That he's so good at coming up with these monsters or, you know, bizarre twists that sometimes the characters are very bland. So, these characters aren't the most likeable, but they do feel like real characters. You know, I had a sense of all of them, which was good. So if you are in the mood for kind of traditional creepy ghost stories with dark and scritchy art, you can find Tom on Twitter at Man O Ghosts. So like a man of war, but Man O Ghosts, all one word. And that has links to his Big Cartel shop, where you can buy special editions of the graphic novels for Halloween, and there's currently a sale on. So if it sounds like your cup of joe, I think generally we recommend them.
Yeah, they're pretty good and spooky.
Yeah. Do we have a texture of the week?
Do we have a texture? I do.
Oh,
do you?
Gosh, I don't know if I do. Well, I'm sure I have objects around to make sounds with somewhere.
But that's the most important bit.
God, I'm going to have to like really reach up to one of these high shelves now. I think I'm so... Oh my gosh. I've kind of got through most of the objects down here. What's this?
Touch that off.
Texture. On my knee. Of the week.
Week.
I genuinely did kind of hurt my knee there.
Oh no. Oh,
Adam. I did a kind of comedy pratfall, which is silly because no one can see it. And in doing it, I was kind of hurt my knee.
Oh dear.
Because I'm old.
Were your noises there just you falling?
Well, it started out as me deliberately falling because I didn't have any noises to make. And then my deliberate fall became a sort of semi-real fall when I hurt my knee.
Oh dear.
Oh, wow. I've fallen in the fire. Oh, my toes. It was a tree I just climbed out up.
Oh, yeah.
I think I tripped on a badger. Bit of Noel Fielding animal whimsy there for all of you Bake Off lovers. So for me, I would say Mags's nose.
Okay.
I just liked generally the kind of... I don't know if it's exactly wartiness. Like, I don't know. I could imagine, like, snipping bits of Mag's off with some scissors, you know? Like, sort of snipping off the end of his nose.
Yeah. Like, you got some scissors.
Yeah, yeah. I could have used those for next the week.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
So, yeah, the flesh of Mags.
Mm. Well, mine is quite adjacent to that, because I'm going to say the hair of Mags.
The flesh of Mags and the hair of Mags.
Specifically when Billy is in the video shop that he works in, and he hears a noise and he sort of leans down under the stacks, and you can just see sort of the upside down straggly ends of Mag's hair. And then sort of the top of his head creeps down and then his eyes. But just the sort of the straggly hairs hanging down, I thought was a pretty good creepy texture.
Yeah. Good old scraggliness.
Mm. Have some scraggles.
Well, I think that might have to be my my parting words.
Okay.
Have some scraggles, creepy kids. Halloween scraggles.
Yeah. That's been Malevolent by Tom Burgess. You can find us on Twitter at StillScaredPod or email us at StillScaredPodcast@gmail.com. Our intro music's by Maki Yamazaki, our outro music's by Joe Kelly, and our artwork is by Letty Wilson, who also, incidentally, has a very good and pretty creepy comic called A Stranger Came to Town, which highly recommend while we're talking about comics.
Oh, thank you. I haven't checked it out, so I think I will.
Hmm. All right. Here's to another year of... creepy, spooky whatnots.
Yeah, don't eat too much choco.
We'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.